That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky present a power word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint in gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works. Grand piano.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from a rainy north side of Lexington.
Yeah, but it's nice.
It is.
You know what that means for me?
What's that?
No migraine.
Mm.
Oh, it's nice. I can breathe through my nose.
Interesting.
I love it. The more miserable you are, the happier I am.
thanks, Ben, that. For your solid dose of sadism in the morning. I get barometric pressure headaches.
Yep.
Sometimes.
Yep.
When
storm
fronts come in, which are weird.
It's funny. I remember a little while back, my dad calling me on like a Saturday for some other reason. And he said, by any chance, did you have a headache when you woke up this morning? Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, it was pretty nasty. And he said, did it go away at around 2:30? And I said, how did you know that? Because the weather in Lexington hadn't changed. He said, I was watching a Reds game, and there was a rain delay at 2:30. So it was a pressure front moving in to a city 90 miles away.
Oh,
did not change the weather here, but made me feel better.
You know,
so you can just root. You don't have to root for Lexington to be nasty. Just the surrounding areas.
Yeah, you
of
got
Lexington
you got your dad's skull.
Yeah, yeah, no.
You know, and
well,
that,
no, he doesn't get them. He just knew that.
Oh, he knew
just,
you
just,
would.
Yeah, just knew I would.
Wow, it's kind of like that scene in Teen Wolf, though, is what it reminded me.
Oh,
of.
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah.
he opens up the closet and his dad's standing there, and his dad's also a wolf, and he's like, I know. I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a long time.
I've watched that movie recently. Yeah. Doesn't hold
didn't
up.
Hold up.
No.
Well, anyways, we
fun as a kid.
We digress. If you don't know, I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And this is Bluegrass Bios. We're here every Friday from noon to two, bringing you some jams, highlighting amazing people doing awesome stuff. And we have one of them in the studio. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, children. This is Donald Mason, executive director of Lexington Lyric and a closet chef impersonator.
Nice. Hey, Donald. So, Donald, you are the executive director at the Lyric Theater, which has so many great things happening over on the corner of 3rd and Rose.
Elm Tree.
Well, Elm Tree, technically, yeah. You're right.
The rose gets...
it becomes Elm Tree.
It doesn't wilt, though. Yeah. It just becomes a tree as opposed to a rose. It has grown up.
It has grown into an elm. So, Donald, first of all, I want to ask you, where are you from originally?
Originally, I have to stake the claim in Midland, Texas, in the West Texas desert, so to speak.
Wow. Like near El Paso.
Friday Night Lights area, Odessa. El Paso is about 5 hours away, which I do have some family over there. Shout out to the Greens. And also have some family over in Houston and the Dallas area, too. So Texas is a large state if you haven't seen it on the map or been there yourself.
Yeah. As I learned from a t-shirt I saw once while I was on spring break, Texas is bigger than France.
Texas is like Well, it actually did try to be its own country at one point, but it's kind of like its own country. But now you also have like Austin, which is its own. It's kind of like Monaco of Texas. And it, even inside of Austin, there's another city inside of Austin named Sunset Valley. So it's like, you know, there's probably, that's probably the safest place on the planet, like some bunker underneath Sunset Valley buried in.
It's like layered.
Yeah.
Concentric layers of safety.
I don't know how you get invited into that. And the last time I was in Austin, I actually haven't seen it for myself, but like it's just this little tiny city. They have their own mayor and everything. But you know, Austin is great. I can't say that I would be you know, jumping back to Midland. It's not necessarily the most fun place. They do have a really nice theater though, but it's just in the middle of nowhere considering Texas. Like it really have to drive like 5 or 6 hours to Dallas, and you know, there's just, it's super hot. I mean, we're talking about some barometric pressure. Like there's really no barometric pressure down there.
I'll keep that in mind. I heard recently, like, Don't Mess with Texas was part of a, like clean up the city campaign.
The whole state. Yeah. Like there was a huge,
in like the early 80s.
Yeah. And I had
and I remember those days. I don't know if you remember those.
Oh, when
people thought nothing of just throwing their garbage onto the ground wherever they were. If you saw it today, even the most conservative red state, you know, I'm not a tree hugger kind of guy, would look at your behavior and say, man, pick that up. What's wrong with you?
No, there's, you know, like people that have, you know, driven through Texas or whatnot, you know that there it's, I'm not going to throw shade on, like, Indiana. I'm just talking about the flatness of the geography. Yeah.
Go ahead and throw shade.
But, like, you know, it's like you're on this, like, treadmill that doesn't end, and you just see the same landscape for, like, hours. And you see this tumbleweed that, like, you just can't imagine how it's passing in front of you, even though you're going, like, 80 miles an hour. And you would see all this trash and stuff build up, and, I mean, it was looking actually pretty bad. So I call Texas in a lot of ways, like, there are, like, serious desert zones when you're driving. It's literally nothing. There's a town called Thurber, Texas that has population of like 10, was like a booming 30,000 town, and then kind of regressed into almost exist, you know, being off the map.
So Donald, how did you end up in Kentucky from Texas?
Well, so there was this tumbleweed between my parents, and they decided that they needed to separate, and the winds of change blew me up to Lexington. I went to Julius Marks, represents the Jaguars. But, you know, I kind of bounced back and forth when I was early on. So I went here for Julius Marks, and then I went back fifth grade in Texas, and I came back up for middle school. And it kind of came to the point where, you know, for everybody that's been to public school, you know, like you have to be in that same group to keep those set of friends. And so every time I would move and then move back, like my friends reset, because by the time I'd be back here, they're already going to different elementary schools and middle schools. A lot of people went to Morton. I went to Tate's Creek. Finally my dad was trying to get me to come to high school in Texas, selling me on the whole Friday Night Lights, the whole football thing. And
were you a football player?
I was a football player, you know, until I blew out my shoulder throwing shot put and discus. So it's another story too. Actually, here's the reason why I landed in Lexington more full time. Like I was going back and forth as a kid, as the plan with my mom and dad. But there was an incident in Midland that somebody actually got killed on the discus field walking. You know, they probably shouldn't have been there, but they got hit in the head with the discus. They canceled the whole program. And at the time, I was like, well, that was like a really important sport to me. I was really high level in middle school. I was looking forward to high school. And that decision, plus the fact that I felt like I was going to get targeted as the principal's kid because he was the principal at the high school I was going to go to. It was kind of like, all right, well, you know.
That can have its advantages and its disadvantages.
Yeah, I gave up a chance to play football with Cedric Benson my senior year. He would have been a sophomore, and we would have won a state championship. And, you know,
he was pretty good.
He was a little good. You know, he was so good that they would pull him out of the fourth quarter because he'd already have 300 yards. But,
wow.
So, yeah, so that decision really landed me more firmly into Lexington. Then I went to UK, and then I ended up graduating from Sullivan and Asbury. And, you know, Lexington is really great. I've seen so many evolutions, and it's, you know, kind of like in a new, you know, birth now too, for, you know, for at least from the artistic side.
Yeah, and Donald, I know music is a huge part of your life, and are you still doing the show on WRFL, Generations of Jazz?
Well, so I'm taking a leave right now, but we have Sarah Smith, who's, I mean, I'll say she's like way more of an actual like true historian of jazz. So like it's in really good keepings. 8 to 10 on Sunday nights. Really good time for jazz. It even goes back to Bill Scott with the Jazz Vault.
Mm-hmm.
And that
shout
was
out.
Yeah. That, well, that show actually inspired me to at least, you know, fill that void. And of course I'm not there right now, but I felt like there was a void for jazz, especially from RFL, and Bill had done such a great job to establish jazz. We moved it to Tuesday for a moment, then we moved it back to Sunday, and then, you know, the lyric is a little bit more than, you know, what people may, some of my friends are like, oh, you just see shows all the time. Well, there's an administration behind the things what we do. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about the lyric. You know, how did you hear about the Lyric Theater initially?
So, I originally moved to Lexington in 1988, and, you know, for those who have been around, know that that was during the time where the Lyric was still decrepit and, sitting on the corner.
It was kind of stereotypical, like the C was at an angle, you know, kind of hanging by one nail.
Yeah. You know, it's, and I will say, so there's a lot of different things that you can say about, you know, what was good or bad. Maybe city didn't act soon enough or whatnot, but at least it was not ever torn down or raised for good or for bad. I mean, that's a different type of topic, but I feel like there was like some protection, spiritual protection or something that just, like, was in the back of people's heads, like, anytime maybe there was a thought of, like, well, let's just make this into a parking lot or a grocery store. Mm-hmm. There was something that created some pause, enough to where it maybe took a little bit longer time, but now we're back into 7 years being open, great programming, always trying to evolve and things like that. So for the better or for worse, and I do think from the East End standpoint, and, you know, obviously being here in the North Side, this is really a time of growth and expansion, and glad to at least see it finally coming to an area really overdue for these type of things.
For sure, and you know, I think we should mention a little bit the history of the Lyric. You know, it was initially opened from 1948 to 1963, and, you know, was really the entertainment centerpiece for Lexington's African American families who, you know, weren't allowed to go to theaters at that time.
Exactly, that was during,
or we had to sneak in the back door to climb up in the balcony to watch the shows.
Well, you know, and that again is just American history and Kentucky history, mm-hmm. and Lexington history. You know, there's a lot of theaters that still have that backdoor entrance for the colored people, which is actually like, it's very real. Like, so people that don't think that actually happened. We have gone through quite a metamorphosis as a country and still continuing to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Lyric and the East End, Dewey Street, Do As You Please Street, that was the, you know, Black Wall Street. You had pretty much every business that you could think of, that, you know, dentist, you know, shops. The Lyric was your place to see first run movies. You could only see black artists play at the Lyric. So people like Dinah Washington, Ray Charles, the Ink Spots, Count Basie, and just the laundry list, and probably even more than we even know, because we, you know, they weren't really keeping history back then. It was a business. So it was a group of people out of Indianapolis that saw a business opportunity that there was no black programming here in Lexington because there was that segregation piece. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of venues back then, you know, the Strand, you know, even, you know, before the Kentucky, the, you know, Ben Ali, and the Lyric was like right in that zone on that second phase. And it really took, a lot of spirit out of Lexington once that demographic kind of, you know, was opened up. You had an opportunity to go to other places in Lexington, but people didn't realize that the lack of support and engagement would actually create that void. And the void was a financial void to that group. And they ended up, you know, not continuing the Lyric. And then it took so long for people to get engaged again, to reignite it. And it took many mayor, you know, administrations to get there. Newberry was the one that was sitting at the time that cut the ribbon. But it was a lot of labor of love from, you know, people like S.T. Roach and Robert Jefferson, Juanita Betts Peterson, you know, Maddie Fox, And actually, Bill Scott, as another shout out, was on the task force originally too. So, so it's drenched in history. We have a lot of missing years that not we can't necessarily say we're making up for, but we just want to make sure that we do the best we can to put us forward and see the lyric, you know, in the future, as opposed to ever having to repeat history.
Absolutely. And I think responding and, you know, creating a space where the community feels, feels like it's theirs, feels like it's part of theirs. I wanted to ask you, just kind of in the context of theaters around America, can you tell us just how unique is the lyric? And there are 540 seats, right?
Yeah. So, well, it's a little bit less. So it's stated as 540. We adjusted that down slightly just to add in a bigger sound booth. Mm-hmm. So it's about 526. The original lyric was about 800 or 900. And so there were some space differences between. But there's some things that are unique to this particular lyric than was in the existing lyric. The original is that we have a museum and art gallery, which is actually not that common comparatively to those that have performing space. We also have a community room, the DeWeese Street Community Room, which is probably the most rented room. Mm-hmm. That's the room really to have your family engagement, to have, you know, weddings and different things that you can use the lyric for, bring them in. Especially if you're a nonprofit or doing something open to the public, the rates are extremely low, like extremely low. And we have it like that to where there is not a barrier. We are a business, so we do have to make some revenues, and we are supported by, you know, grants and the city and whatnot, but we also, you know, want to continue to improve and grow the facility. You look at, like, we were a Chitlin Circuit venue. There aren't that many that are actually still going. I mean, you've got one in Indianapolis, I think is the closest one, Madam C.J. Walker, and then you've got some in Alabama and some of the deeper south. And then we've actually started doing a project, not that we were linked to these, but other lyric theaters in the country. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why we're trying to do, kind of going back to see what existing Chitlin Circuit venues and other lyric theaters, is just to give us an opportunity to potentially cross-pollinate. Some of our missions may align with each other. Maybe not. You know, the opera, the lyric opera in Chicago is not necessarily the same vibe that we have. But again, you know, making some of those inroads, the Caramu House in Cleveland, Ohio, of course, C.J. Walker, finding ways to where the lyric can ally with other organizations that are similar to this. But we are very special. We're definitely unique in Lexington. There's really no place that has the deep history like we have, and also the ability to create really pure and organic, you know, cultural programming that is actually coming straight out of our mission statement.
Absolutely. And you know, I also wanted to mention that the city owns the Lyric Theater, right?
Yeah, the city owns the building, and they support us through funding. Mm-hmm. The Lyric Theater and Cultural Arts Center Corporation is the business inside of the Lyric, and that's responsible for the programming and all, like, the outward facing that you see at the Lyric. Mm-hmm. So it really takes a lot. You know, people kind of misconstrue it that, you know, well, you're still paying for it. Like, you pay for a lot of public services, and we feel like we are a service to the community, like a cultural asset, a cultural way to express maybe what Lexington directly won't express, because, you know, we have that ability to go through that cultural arts side. And so we are open, you know, to community ideas. A lot of the events that we've actually had have spawned off of some community input. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't matter. Like, people ask me, well, can you get, you know, John Legend? I'm like, well, that may be a stretch.
Yeah, but you got about 20 grand we can borrow.
But like Talib Kweli and Galactic, you know, those types of shows were shows that people were like, hey, take a risk on a name, and hopefully the crowd did respond to those. You know, not every show, you know, we also are a small community, even with 300,000 people, we do share a lot of the same arts demographic. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to avoid, you know, a stumble here and there, maybe just with, like, programming up against something else that was, but that's kind of the beauty of Lexington. There for a while, you know, we've kind of in the 90s, the music scene was like really popping. In the early 2000s, like, it seemed like culture was just kind of stripped off of Lexington for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, there just wasn't a whole lot of outlets during that time. And so you start to see it coming back now with, you know, the resurgence of other, you know, music venues. And, you know, we're trying to increase our programming, bring in concerts that we weren't bringing in before, and just to continue, the Downtown Arts Center is also another city asset. Another thing, too, on that note is there's some work being done to try to engage all of the city-owned, like at least the city building assets, the Downtown Arts Center, the Kentucky, the Opera House, the Lyric Theater, and try to increase this awareness of arts and culture through the city's assets. So then for people that are looking outside of Lexington, maybe to move here or to stay here after college or whatnot, that's a really big important thing that, you know, maybe people don't really think about, and people may not like UK for some reasons or another, but they graduate tens of thousands of young professionals every single year. And we should have first right to those people to stay here and to help grow Lexington's culture. Mm-hmm. And without the culture side, we won't ever attain or retain that great talent. You know, it's easy to go to Asheville or even Chicago or Nashville, but it's also easy to stay in Lexington and then travel out. That's what a lot of people that I know do, because they love Lexington and they see the potential and they see what where their niche is, but they can also get to pretty much anywhere on the Eastern Seaboard in, you know, half a day's drive.
Right.
Well, what are some of the other programs or shows that you've had that maybe aren't music or theater related? What kind of public outreach stuff have you guys done recently?
Well, I tell you, we've become this hub for just information seeking and distribution. We're working with the police force and Leadership Lexington for expungement sessions, so helping.
What is that?
So for example, obviously anybody that has a felony has a whole different life path in front of them. You can't vote, right. Hard to get a job, etc. Can't go to school. You're almost blacklisted from being an active citizen. And, you know,
that's kind of where recidivism comes from, isn't it?
Exactly. It's like, why? There is no rehab if you don't allow somebody to actually change their lifestyle. So this group has looked to us as a place where people can meet, feel comfortable, get information about how they can fix their lifestyle. Of course, you still have to be active about it. You still have to do those steps and be proactive. But without that information, you might not even take that first step. And we need, there's shortages in employment in different areas. I just saw a video for the police, the state troopers now rescinding a little bit more of their restrictions. You still have to go through the academy. You still have to go through, you know, background checks or whatnot, but they are now allowing, you don't have to be a military. You don't have to have had 60 hours of college credit. So this group, for an example, is trying to at least benefit the community to engage more workforce, to get people, you know, back to a positive lifestyle, like thinking like, I am a citizen, I can do these things. Mm. I can be engaged in my civic process of voting. I can go back to school and improve my education. So that's one just recently. We've worked with Kentucky State University on a couple of things. One was with Dr. LaChrista Finn about community violence forum, getting people talking about how to be proactive about stopping violence and seeing violence before it happens. Mm-hmm. On the other side of that, we've worked with Farmer Brown, the MC, for those.
He's been on the show.
Yeah, he's for those who haven't actually met him, like,
go into our archives.
Yeah, if he's not smiling, he's probably really upset, because like, he's smiling all the time. He's got this program currently called Fresh Op, which is bringing some community members, mainly the youth community, and teaching them how to grow in small spaces, how to grow in urban settings, and what to do. Some knowledge about things that, you know, it's not just for farmers. It's not just for people that live on a horse farm and building, you know, these big farms. And that's going to extend into after school program coming up in the fall. Very called cool. Basics for Bosses. So getting young people thinking about how to run their business, and that's going to be coupled with UK Federal Credit Union. They're coming in as a sponsor, going to bring in some education on financial literacy, talking about budgeting, talking about, you know, savings and checking accounts, how to build that, and then taking that knowledge into, okay, so you have this potential, you know, business that you might be able to do with agriculture or with arts or whatnot. How do you package that, brand that, etc.? And then, of course, some, you know, freestyle homework sessions after school. So, I mean, those are You know, we do try to link them back to art, but we also are open to making sure that we are community-based and not necessarily... We know that we're going to continue to do arts programming internally, but working with all these other partners really allow us to open ourselves up to different demographics and keep telling different stories of, you know, different things like that.
So, Donald, if anyone out there is listening and they have an idea for a program or something that they want to do at the Lyric Theater, how do they go about doing that?
Or maybe just volunteering in general.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, we love all of the above. So you can help as... little as just coming to shows, being a patron, and we love that.
Which is very important.
Yeah, very important. Please don't disregard how much of that. And we'd also have free and open to the public, pay what you can, and some ticketed events. So it's not always, maybe so there...
80% free?
Yeah, maybe is an event that might cost something, but if you look at all the other programs that are going to come behind that, free movie series, your kids could get into our summer program for free, you know, and things like that, it really does balance out. But we... would love to have you at Kwanzaa and Back to School Carnival. So that's one thing. If you can't really give money but want to be engaged with us and see events, and also we just had our baseball game, even though it rained last night, but you know, that was a perk of being a volunteer. Volunteers got a free ticket to the game representing the Lyric. You can email Beverly Henderson at volunteer@lexandlyric.com, and she'll get you piped in to being able to volunteer. As far as like that next level, if you want to make a meaningful gift or whatnot to the Lyric and help us grow either as a organization, maybe bring sponsorship to a program or something like that, Ashley C. Smith is a great asset for the Lyric. She's been doing a great job trying to bridge these gaps, help us grow a program. You can reach her at development@lexandlyric.com. And just in general, if you want to keep in touch, you know, with myself, or if you have some ideas, or you have a community organization that you really feel like could be impacted by working with the Lyric Theater, you can get to me directly at director@lexandlyric.com. And we're open to working with everybody and trying to find, you know, that balance. You know, we are a business, so you have to just at least understand that we are trying to survive in this market where there's a lot of different arts organizations as well. But at the same time, we are in a unique position to give that voice and that platform to organizations that may not have access otherwise.
Right, absolutely. Well, Donald, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us more about the Lyric. We always like to learn more. And the last question I have for you is there any information or any bits of the Lyric history that you're trying to find more information out about? Because I know there are some missing pieces of the puzzle. Is there anything that maybe our listeners who are listening now might be able to help out with or help bring to the Lyric?
So here's a couple things. I'm glad you brought that up. And the second part of this answer will be where the radio ties back into this. But when I first got into office and I was really thinking about, okay, so this organization didn't really keep a whole lot of history, but a lot of people did engage with the Lyric and still living here or their families lived here. So if you have even the most, if you think it's trash to you, it might not be trash to us, like, you know, programs or ticket stubs or photos of your family or friends or anything like that, that you may have in your personal collections, or, you know, again, you may not even think is that important. We are really looking for those types of artifacts and mementos that we could actually display at the Lyric and show where we've come from before. The other aspect of that too is, as we are trying to work towards some recording a situation at the Lyric to where we could bring in people and get their, you know, life stories or their recollections of the Lyric, or, and not just the, you know, the 1948 to 63 Lyric. We also are trying to bridge our new heritage, our new legacy. So maybe you came to opening night in 2010. Tell us about that experience. Tell us about, you know, what you have been, how, what the Lyric means to you now, and, you know, things like that. So keep an eye out for the call for, you know, inviting people. We'll try to have some sessions, you know, once that gets off the ground, you know, like once or twice a week, where we just invite people in to drop some of their, you know, stories from inside. And, you know, if you don't have ticket stubs, you might have that story that is really going to also be, you know, meaningful to us as well.
And one last quick question, because I'm from Lexington. Where do you park?
All right. So that is that's an elephant in the room for a lot of people with downtown related. And I won't say that it's, you know, like a five-story parking garage or anything like that. But we do have, after 5 o'clock, we're grateful to be able to use Polk Dalton Clinic's parking lot.
Just right across the street.
Just right across the street.
Polk Dalton?
Polk Dalton.
Like Dalton. President yeah. James Polk.
And then Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Just a little bonus nugget of Polk Dalton. Those are two African-American physicians that have been honored at that site. Just right down the street where the Urban League building is was where the original Polk Dalton is. But that's a UK Polk Dalton clinic, which... Before 5, you know, you probably need to get your knees checked or your hearing checked, but after 5, you can park at the Lyric and come to us. We also have a small parking lot. We've been grateful to work with O.L. Hughes on the side. You can park there. Just be respectful of, you know, any business that they may be conducting.
And you got metered spots downtown.
Metered spots after five,
you're yeah. fine.
And Elm Tree is totally free, and there's parking spots all
over. And so that's another thing that people don't know, that, like, all the parking is free. We don't charge for parking. And that alone makes it, you know, an affordable trip as well. So, we look forward to seeing all of y'all engage with us. And hopefully, one last thing. So I would be remiss to not say that we have a play running actually starting today. So if you actually want to come in and see a little bit of Kentucky history with Danville, this is a play about 2nd Street in Danville, which went through urban renewal. And lost their black neighborhood to a park system, which is still there. And this story kind of talks about right before that is happening and what that means to the community. And, you know, just to at least enlighten people of what has happened here in Central Kentucky. So that play is Good Blues Tonight, featuring former Miss Kentucky Clark Davis, put on by Pioneer
Friend
Playhouse.
Of the show.
Oh, yeah. She's incredible, too. This is her second time doing the show or the play. And so she's like, well, they're my lines now. They're not Robbie Henson's lines anymore. But the show will be tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 and then Mother's Day on Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Cool. Well, Donald Mason, executive director of the Lyric Theater, the crown jewel of the East End, representing. Thank you very much for coming in, Donald. Really appreciate it, and everything you do for the East End and Lexington as a whole.
Thank you all. Thanks for being here and giving the community a voice out there.
Oh, anytime. So nonetheless, we'll be back here in a bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio.